right, guys, you are listening to Pop Culture Network Radio. As always, I'm your host, Dirt, and it's another Friday afternoon episode. Actually, it's Friday evening at this point. It's getting a little long in the day. It's been quite a day around here. I don't know how you guys have been doing this week, but for me, it's been a little busy. Part of it is New York Comic Con and trying to keep track of a lot of the neat stuff that's happening there, but just in general, it's been a busy week, so today we're going to talk about some of the comic book news coming out of New York Comic Con. We're going to talk maybe a couple toy things. We'll see if we can have time to get to those. I've had a couple people email me asking me about my thoughts on what happened with WWE this past week. We can talk about that. And of course, we'll be talking about TNA Impact, because apparently I've found the niche. I've found what people aren't talking about enough. So more people want to hear about it here, and that's TNA Wrestling. So we'll talk about Impact here to wrap up the show. But first, let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on in the world today right now. First up, this is kind of outside of everything else that we normally talk about, but I thought it's worth mentioning, is that right now, and I say right now, and I mean in the general sense this week, there are talks going on with CBS Television to bring Star Trek back to TV. Now, for a lot of you, I know that makes you very super excited. Some of you, you don't really care, but who cares about you guys anyway? I'm excited to see Star Trek come back, as long as it's not another ship in space lost trying to contact new civilizations. Here's the thing, you know, the original show I didn't really get into when I was younger. It's like, yeah, it's an old show, cool, whatever. Didn't talk about it a whole bunch. But when Next Generation came along, that show was great. And then they had Deep Space Nine came along, and that was great. I started getting into the old movies. I started watching the old show. I loved all of that. And then came along Voyager, and I was really kind of disappointed with Voyager, because Voyager was basically the same thing as Next Generation. It's this ship. It's meeting new aliens out in space. It just didn't have the same draw to me as the as something like Deep Space Nine did, because Deep Space Nine, you know, really felt like it was doing something different than what you had. But I mean, for the most part, Voyager was okay, just not that big of a deal. I didn't really care one way or another. And then Enterprise came along, and I just could not stand that show. There were so many things wrong with that show, I just could not get into it. So when it all kind of faded away, I wasn't really all that sad about it. But the talk of a new series coming along, which of course ties into the new movie universe, I am pretty excited for. So I'm looking forward to see how that works out. So anyway, just wanted to throw that out there real quick. And, yeah. So other news coming out is that Doctor Who missing episodes have been found. Now, I'm not a big Doctor Who fan, but I know a lot of you guys are. You're big Whovians, I guess. Your Whovenites. I don't know what the colloquialism is for Doctor Who fans. But anyway, if you go to iTunes, you can find on there these missing Doctor Who episodes. Apparently, a bunch of the episodes in the like 60s, I guess, you know, back in those days, they didn't save them. They were on the newfangled videotape, and they would play them, and then they would just record over them and do it again. The same thing happened with The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. There's a stretch of The Tonight Show that's missing that they'll never be able to replace. And they thought that these Doctor Who episodes were gone for good, but they found a bunch of them because they had been shipped to Nigeria for rebroadcast down there, and they were put on film and sent down there, and someone found the film canisters in this old TV station warehouse. So they've been remastered, and they are available now. You can download them on iTunes. They're going to come out on DVD later. I would think a Blu-ray might be in order, but I guess they're just going to go the DVD route, maybe because they're not that high, you know, high def or anything like that, but I know that's a big deal to a lot of people out there. So if you want to check those out, you can jump on iTunes, do a search for Doctor Who, you'll find those missing episodes. Or I'm sure they may even be featured on the iTunes store. I'm not a huge Doctor Who fan, but I'm an even less iTunes fan. If something is iPhone exclusive, iTunes exclusive, iPad exclusive, I'm not touching it. I'm not going to go anywhere near it. So that has nothing to do with me, but anyway, for you Whovians out there. Next up, For those of you that follow Art Balthazar and Franco, the guys who did like Superman Family Adventures and Tiny Titans and books like that, they have started their own company, Aw Yeah Comics. It was a Kickstarter thing, and it really took off. They have been publishing some strips on Thrillbent, the digital online site by Mark Waid, and putting out their own comics. And now Dark Horse has apparently made a deal with them. Dark Horse signed a deal with them several months back to have them do Itty Bitty Hellboy, a kid-friendly Hellboy series at Dark Horse. Well, now Dark Horse has made the move to reprint their Aw Yeah comics at Dark Horse. This is one of the news stories coming out of New York Comic Con, one of the big things there. So they're pretty happy for getting their chance to reprint there, which, I mean, really, self-publishing is one thing, publishing online is one thing, but if you can get a bigger company, you know, I mean, obviously DC and Marvel are the big ones, but Image, Dark Horse, IDW, Boom, you know, one of those Image, one of those type studios, if you can get them to publish it, it's going to, you know, be seen by a lot more people, and so that's pretty good news for them. Let's see, what else do we have? There's an upcoming Marvel series. Let's see, all new X-Men, or I'm not upcoming series, but upcoming issue where they showed X-23, and she's embracing and kissing another member of the X-Men, and that character was silhouetted out. They didn't want to reveal who it was in this image. Well, the image was apparently posted uncensored on Marvel's website somewhere, and someone, of course, this is the internet, someone ran across it and immediately realized that the character hidden was not silhouetted and hidden. And so this is going to be a spoiler. If you don't want to have your X-Men storyline spoiled, if you've been following Battle of the Atom and stuff, go ahead to about the 750 mark here. But I'm going to go ahead and spoil this. She's making out with Scott Summers, Cyclops. And not any Scott Summers Cyclops. It looks like it's the version of him from the past, the one Battle of the Atom is trying to send back. So, spoiler over. There you go with that. That's something to look forward to if you've been, you know, especially following Battle of the Atom. Now you know a little bit that's going to happen with those characters. Things aren't going to turn out like maybe you expected there. All new X-Factor is going to be coming from Peter David. He, of course, wrapped up his historic run on X-Factor earlier this year. And, of course, the question was, well, aren't they just going to relaunch it? And certainly they are. All new X-Factor is about an internet search corporation called Serval Industries creating its own superhero team after buying the name from Jamie Madrox. So far, it looks like Polaris, Quicksilver, and Gambit are going to be part of the team to kick it off. Now, next up, it looks like we're getting a storyline starting in January called The Trial of Jean Grey. And this is going to be running through all new X-Men and Guardians of the Galaxy for some reason. I'm not sure exactly how that's going to tie in with Guardians of the Galaxy of all books, but sure enough, it looks like it is. So, and again, this looks to be like young Jean Grey from the past, so it looks like that's something to look forward to. Let's see. Charles Soule, who's been making the rounds, doing a lot of different comics for Marvel and DC, apparently he is going to be bringing Ghost Rider to the Thunderbolts. A lot of people have been wondering what happened with the Ghost Rider character. Kind of disappeared after the last series fizzled out after Fear Itself, and now it looks like there's your answer. All right, this one, I'm a little skeptical on this next story. One of the problems I've always said with the relaunch of the Valiant Universe is it didn't have Magnus, it didn't have Solar, it didn't have who I felt were the key characters that made Valiant such a strong property in the 90s. And a lot of people like the new Valiant Universe, but the new Valiant Universe is just not for me. And it looks like the characters that the ones that I was most missing are going to be returning. They're going to be returning from Dynamite Comics. Now, Dynamite, again, Dynamite is a company that I just don't have a lot of faith in. Occasionally, they put out some stuff that's pretty good, but for the most part, most of the time when Dynamite handles stuff, it's not to my tastes. I'll just put it that way. Dynamite has apparently made a deal to do 4 comic book series: Turok, Dinosaur Hunter, Solar Man of the Atom, Magnus Robot Fighter, and Dr. Spectre. Now, Dr. Spectre was a character around in the Gold Key days, but really wasn't part of the Valiant thing. But of course, the other ones you can see. Greg Pak will be doing Turok, Dinosaur Hunter, but the tone that he's taking with the book, you know, there's this Native American and he's, you know, fighting dinosaurs in the modern era, and he wants to talk about the political and social ramifications that come with dinosaurs being in the modern era. That to me does not sound like the most exciting series possible. And granted, here I'm being a little mean about this. I am skeptical, but you know, you got to do that. Fred Van Lente is going to be taking over Magnus Robot Fighter. And he says, "I'm looking forward to bringing science fiction action to the new series in a thought-provoking way." It's about a guy who punches robots. Like, why do we have to overthink it? Let's see. The very nature of robotics questions what it means to be human. We have Frank Barbary, I guess. Dynamite has lined up some top talent. Flattered to be part of it. New directions we're taking with Solar included. I'm a huge fan of the character. We'll be putting a unique spin on the mythology with an emphasis on family and character. I'm hoping my take will resonate strongly across readership, new and old alike. I'll certainly bring in a lot of new and exciting things to the table. Maybe. But family and character. I mean, one of the things that I loved about Solar was the way he kind of struggled with his powers and how he changed. Kind of what they did with Captain Atom in the New 52, really, if you want to get down to it. So that one, I can kind of see maybe where it could be okay. Who do they have here? Mark Waid is going to be doing Dr. Spectre. Dr. Spectre. The challenge comes in figuring how a professional skeptic, a famous investigator who debunks and exposes the extra normal and keeps himself grounded, can function in a world that suddenly hosts superheroes and supervillains. Maybe. Again, there's a maybe there. I could kind of maybe see how that might work. I don't know. The problem with new series is that they always announce the stuff that they're going to do in, like, the first arc. You know, what they're going to do to bring the character out and to introduce him to everybody. And a lot of the times you hear that concept and it doesn't sound like, how do you make that an ongoing series? You know, how does that work for a series that is going to keep going and going and going? So, again, skeptical. I'm trying not to be a complete downer on all of this, but I am somewhat skeptical. There's going to be a new Batman series from DC, another one, because, of course, Batman is their top-selling character right now. This one is called Batman Eternal, and it's going to be a weekly series. One of the things that has come out about this new weekly series, besides the fact that it's going to have some different artists and writers moving through it, you know, in order to keep it weekly and coming out, is that Stephanie Brown will be returning to the DC Universe in this. The New 52 did DC did a live blog of their New 52 panel. And so apparently it was mentioned on there somewhere around, he thinks, Batman Eternal number 3. Stephanie Brown, she was, for those of you who don't remember who Stephanie Brown was, she was the female Robin who was Robin briefly, and then she quote-unquote died, but it turned out that Dr. Tompkins, I think was her name, faked her death in order to prove to Bruce Wayne that he's playing with people's lives. And she came back as, spoiler, she came back as Batgirl. And she had a very good series going on in DC Comics that they canceled. And then with the New 52, they brought back Barbara Gordon as Batgirl. So everybody wondered what happened to Stephanie Brown. Some people hate the character. Some people love her. Personally, I like the character. I think the reason why a lot of people don't like her is because of the Robin situation and the whole death situation. But, I mean, that's not really her. That was just kind of the bad storytelling that was going at the time. But I will definitely be looking forward to that. I like the character. I guess here's one thing that they noted is that Scott Snyder didn't want to bring her back. He really didn't have plans for anything. It was Geoff Johns who fought for her and wanted to bring her back. So there's something to keep in mind. Let's see. There was a Superman panel at New York Comic Con. Let's see. Superman Wonder Woman with Charles Soule. It's going to have some quiet moments, but the first six-issue arc is supposed to be a big action-packed story arc. The idea is to have something big and powerful and noisy to get people's attention, but it will quiet down eventually as the series goes on. Let's see. Brett Booth will be coming to Batman Superman after Jay Lee finishes up his arc, which I'm not a big Brett Booth fan. I mean, he's all right. You know, I don't want to, detract from the guy's abilities. He certainly is a storyteller. But Jay Lee, I wanted to like Jay Lee on Batman Superman. I thought he did a great job on the Ozymandias Before Watchmen series. He's been good doing the Stephen King Dark Tower stuff. But his work here on Batman Superman, it started out kind of strong, but I think he's having a hard time keeping up with the schedule. The art was getting kind of clouded and hard to follow, and you couldn't really tell who was talking, and kind of became a big mess on that. So someone like Brett Booth, completely different style, very clean style. So that'd be all right for that. Scott Lobdell is doing a Krypton Return storyline that runs across the 25th issues of Action Comics, Supergirl, Superboy, and Superman. The Super Family is going back in time to stop the destruction of Krypton. He said that Superboy would die at the end of issue 25, and the series would then be about John Wayne Kent, the original son of Clark and Lois. Supergirl will be moving on to a new title. Parasite will show up in Action Comics to feed off Superman, or feed off Lois, and Superman will allow it. I don't know what the hell is going on. There's some crazy stuff going on here. Scott Lobdell, he's one of those guys that he can write some interesting stories, but he does tend to get carried away sometimes without having, I guess you could say, proper editorial control over him. He can get a little carried away, and it looks like he might be doing some of that here. I can see some people being pretty excited about some of the stuff that he's talking about here just because it is so different, and it is in many cases what you could say is like game-changing type stuff that he's doing here, but I don't know. For the most part, sounds like the inmates running the asylum type of situation there with some of the stuff that he's into. But, you know, hey, I'll give it an opportunity. I'll at least read it, you know, before I completely put it down. But it does sound like it's getting out there. Let's see. Next up, IDW announced a new ongoing Transformers G.I. Joe crossover series. They've done a lot of miniseries crossing over the two properties in the past, but now they're going to be doing an ongoing series written and drawn by Tom Scioli, or I think that's how you pronounce it, Scioli. He's the guy who did Godland, if you remember Godland from Image Comics, which was the Jack Kirby type giant things in space, whatever. He's going to be taking over. He's going to be working with co-writer John Barber, who's been doing the Transformers Robots in Disguise series. So you can look forward to that. It looks like that's not coming till next summer, though. So you got a lot of time until that comes. Let's see. Nathan Edmondson and Phil Noto are working on a new Black Widow series for Marvel. That's apparently from one of those teasers that said Atonement that came out from Marvel. They did those worthless image teasers. And there you go. We've got some new Avengers books also coming out. Avengers AI is getting a new push with a new story arc. Sam Humphries is taking the Android Avengers 10,000 years into the future. He wants to do something completely different and crazy, so that's what they're letting him do with that. There's a new ongoing title called Avengers World. Jonathan Hickman and Nick Spencer are teaming up. They're basically saying all of the Earth is under the Avengers' protection. And so Avengers World is apparently, it's going to be like those Justice League books we used to get in the 90s, Justice League International, Justice League Europe, all of that kind of stuff. Avengers Undercover, teenage heroes set out to become villains in order to destroy the Avengers from the inside. I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work, but there you go with that. Secret Avengers. Let's see, Nick Spencer is going to be leaving the series, and so Kot, K-O-T, whoever that is, he's going to be taking it over as part of the, all-new Marvel Now Secret Avengers, and, they are basically, new cast members, including Spider-Woman and some sinister, shadowy players, so you're going to have a darker Avengers book. There you go. Let's see. I guess the one last thing to talk about here would be Detective Comics 27. Detective Comics 27 in the first volume way back in like 1939, 1938, whenever it was the first appearance of Batman. So, of course, they're going to be doing Detective Comics 27 and in a couple months. And it's going to be a 96-page special. You're going to have work from Frank Miller returning. You're going to have guys like Brad Meltzer there. You're going to have just a lot of people coming back to do some pretty big stories. They're making a big deal out of it. 96 pages, you're probably looking at that one being a $9.99 issue is what I'm going to guess. So $10, get ready to pay for it. But again, it's going to be one of those spiraling out of Zero Year, talking about the early days of Batman and his career. So there's something to look forward to with that. Kind of be a big deal. So there's something to look forward to. So there you go. That's some of the news that's coming out of New York Comic Con right now as far as comics goes. If you've got any questions or comments, remember you can email me, dirt@popculturenetwork.com. If there's something going on there that catches your attention, you want to talk about, you want to drop a comment on or ask a question, we can talk about next week's show. Remember, that's dirt@popculturenetwork.com. Now, as far as toy news goes, coming out of New York Comic Con, there is a bunch of stuff. First up, Mattel is debuting a new 4-inch line. That's the, basically the same as G.I. Joe, Marvel Universe, Infinite Heroes, that kind of stuff. This new 4-inch line is called Multiverse, and it's based on the movie versions of DC characters. So, first up, they're doing Superman 2, Batman, and Batman Returns, the Michael Keaton movies. So what they're showing off are 4-inch figures of Terrence Stamp as Zod, Christopher Reeve as Superman, Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman, and Michael Keaton as Batman. And they show both a masked and unmasked Michael Keaton Batman. And these are based on the movie likenesses. They've got the okays from the actors or from their estates, whatever. And so these are... they look very nice. I mean, their articulation, appears to be neck, shoulders, elbows, waist, hips, maybe knees, can't really tell, and that's about it. You know, not a whole lot of articulation in these figures, but for the way they look, now granted these are prototypes, these are on display at the show, so they're not mass production yet. Probably going to lose a little bit of detail once they go into mass production, but still look pretty good. And I gotta say, look like something that I'll definitely want to get my hands on. DC Collectibles was also showing off figures based on the new animated movie Justice League War, based on the new 52 Justice League opening arc. Also, some new 52 Earth 2 figures that they were showing off. So we've got a Green Lantern, Shazam, Superman, Flash, Wonder Woman, and Batman. And these are all coming from the Justice League War story, tying into Flashpoint and the new 52. Those look interesting, but they're based not off the Jim Lee artwork, but based off the animation of the new series. So they don't look quite like the Jim Lee designs. They look stylized, look a little funky in some cases, but overall interesting. And then we've got the 6-inch figures here, Green Lantern, Flash, and Wonder Woman from Earth 2 as part of that. There's also a new Sandman statue coming out. I know people like statues, you know, whatever. You can look for that. Hasbro had a couple different things here. First up, with Transformers, they showed off the Age of Extinction Optimus Prime. Now, Age of Extinction is the new movie that's coming out. Unfortunately, yes, they still will continue. So this is the long nose cab with the flames on it. Look for Optimus Prime. You can see how it looks, but part of the new 2014 Transformers line. You know, here's the thing. When they got away from the movies and started making Transformers based off animated, started bringing back the masterpieces and the commemorative series stuff again, I got sucked back into Transformers. In fact, I went out and bought ConstructBots today just to see what they were like because I haven't played with any of those yet. I love Transformers. I hate Bayformers. I hate the movie. I hate these things. So looks, I mean, it just looks like Bayformers. So if you're into that, if that's your thing, then you can look forward to that. I, on the other hand, I bought a vintage G1 Ultra Magnus Complete this week. So there's, I'd much rather go for that stuff than this, but whatever. There you go. Let's see. Hasbro, they were showing off some of the packaging for the new Star Wars Rebels line, which is going to be based off the new show, and 3 3/4-inch figures coming in 2014 for that. Let's see. Star Wars Black 6-inch figures, Series 2, Episode 3, Anakin was the first series that they showed off there. They were also showing off some new Angry Birds Star Wars Telepods figures, which, I mean, yeah, whatever. I guess my son likes Angry Birds and all that stuff, so I guess it's kind of interesting to see some of that stuff, but... Black Series 3 3/4-inch action figures. They were being revealed for the first time. Wave 2, Episode 5 Luke Skywalker, Episode 5 Yoda, Episode 5 Snowtrooper Commander, and Episode 5 Torin Farr, who I don't know who that is. But there you go. If you're looking for a Torin Farr figure, because... you hadn't had one before, well, now's your opportunity to get into that. One other thing, as long as we're talking about New York Comic Con, is that New York Comic Con, the badges came with an RFID chip in it, and you had the ability when you signed up as a member of the press or a professional, I think even maybe fan badges too, you had the ability of tying it into your social network account. And if you were signing up for it, you probably thought that what this was going to do was make it so it could pull in, like, your photograph, it could pull in your name, you wouldn't have to fill out as much paperwork and type as much stuff in, and, you know, whatever, and cool, you know, wouldn't be too worried about it. However, New York Comic Con, what they did with these social networking information that people put in their accounts, they were automatically posting to Facebook and Twitter on behalf of the people who were picking up their badges. So as they were moving about New York Comic Con, the RFID chip would ping that they had entered, and it would post something to their Facebook or Twitter that say, like, I love New York Comic Con. New York Comic Con is the greatest 4 days of the year. So and so, so on. And basically, a lot of people were very, very upset. It was one thing. Some of these were just like, I just checked into New York Comic Con 2013. No big deal. It's going to tweet something like that out. I don't know that that's such a big deal. But saying New York Comic Con is the best 4 days of my year, or I love New York Comic Con. So much pop culture to digest, can't handle the awesome. That's pretty crappy right there. Like, those are just bad tweets. I mean, if you're going to hijack someone's account and post on their behalf, at least make it something better than that. That's just kind of embarrassing. All right, well, we're half hour into the show already. So there's stuff going on from New York Comic Con. Those of you guys asking about that. I did get an update from Nick Ochoa. He's our guy at New York Comic Con right now. He did pick up for me the DC Collectibles 2-pack with Hal Jordan and Saint Walker. So I'm grateful for that. I'll be getting that in the mail sometime next week or so. But he said, actually, it was packed. He got in the Maddie line for a long time. Mattel, they showed off Extendar and what was the other guy? Frog or Flog or Foosh or Flug or I can't remember his name. But anyway, nobody that I particularly cared about, but I know a lot of you guys like Master stuff. So you know who I'm talking about. Florg, Flug, Flues, Flog. Anyway, so he was checking that stuff out, but he said the show was absolutely packed today. And today's Friday. Friday is usually less traffic than the Saturday, so I can only imagine just how crazy tomorrow is going to be at New York Comic-Con. But let's take a moment. Let's talk about some of the wrestling stuff that you guys wanted to talk about. And first up, I guess we probably need to talk about WWE. WWE had their Battleground pay-per-view on Sunday. And one of the things going on in WWE has been the fight over the WWE Championship between Daniel Bryan and Orton. Bobby Orton, Kid Orton, Rick Orton. What the hell is that? My brain just suddenly decided to freak out on me. And I know it's Orton. I can see his tattoo sleeves in my mind. But I want to say Bobby Orton, and I know that's not right. It's not Bobby Orton. It's that other. Ah, my head hurts. Anyway, Orton and Daniel Bryan have been fighting over the title. The title's been held up. They had one pay-per-view, got the rug pulled from under them. They had another pay-per-view, had the rug pulled out from under them. So the idea of Battleground was you were finally going to see who's going to be a world champion. Even if it wasn't going to be the best match ever, you're still going to get this. You're finally going to see who gets to be world champion. And, of course, the finish at the end had Big Show coming out, laying out both guys, and then leaving. So you got no winner. You got no finish to the match. A real downer. People were yelling obscenities. They were demanding refunds. People were getting refunds from their pay-per-view provider. And really, in actuality, everything that could go wrong with this pay-per-view did. At one point, the power went out, so they didn't do the recap packages for the main event because they had to reboot all of their equipment. They had the Divas match, someone missed a spot, and the whole thing got thrown off from there. They had the only match that was really anything of note was the one with the Rhodes family versus the Shield. That one went off really well. People really got into that match, and of course the wrestling was good for it, and that always always helps, you know. It's always nice to not crap all over what you're supposed to be doing in the ring. So good for them on that. But overall, it was a terrible, terrible pay-per-view. And when you tuned in on Raw the next night, the show was definitely better than the pay-per-view the night before, which part of the problem is that they have to do 12 pay-per-views a year. I mean, that's just their business model, is they have to do 12 pay-per-views. And because they put so much time in front of WrestleMania to really hype WrestleMania and push it, they have to juggle around a whole bunch of other pay-per-views, and it puts two of them in the month of October. So in October, you have a pay-per-view at the beginning of the month and a pay-per-view at the end of the month, and that's just kind of how it works out. And it feels like these pay-per-views are too close together. There's not enough time going, you know, in between all of these different pay-per-views, Night of Champions to Battleground, which is, you know, the new one that they threw in there, to Hell in the Cell. Things don't really get developed well. Things have to work too quickly. And when you have a finish with no winner, when you have someone like Big Show come down to the ring and just knock out the two people in the match, it really just kind of takes a dump all over the importance of having the match in the first place. If you wanted to have Big Show come down and knock out both guys and have there be no winner in the match, there are ways you could do that without compromising the integrity of it, is really the only way I can think to describe it. Like, for instance, if you had Big Show come down to the ring and he knocks out Randy Orton. There's his name, Randy. Couldn't think of your first name, Randy. I want to say Bobby. It wasn't Bobby. It was Randy. All right, Randy Orton. It's been so long. To be honest, I have not watched WWE since Zeb Coulter appeared and started doing the whole racist thing. As soon as I saw that happening, I was like, you know what? Raw, it's 3 hours. It's too long. I'm not that excited by it. I'm just not watching WWE anymore. And I stopped. And so I only watch ROH and Impact these days. So it's been a long time since I've seen it, so the names aren't coming to me as easily. But as far as wrestling psychology goes, if you're going to take a Big Show, have him come down and knock out both guys, he could go down and he could knock out the first guy. He could knock out Daniel Bryan. And then he can go over to Randy Orton, and he could look at Randy Orton like he's going to shake his hand or something. He could knock out Randy Orton. And he could drag Randy Orton over and lay him on top of Daniel Bryan, but do it so Daniel Bryan's shoulders are on the mat, and then when you lay Randy Orton, Randy Orton's laying on top of him, but both of his shoulders are on the mat, and the referee can see shoulders and go 1, 2, 3, and count for the bell, but not declare a winner because both guys have their shoulders on the mat. Like, you could do something like that. You could do something where he could knock out Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton could capitalize and win the title, and then you could still have Daniel Bryan winning the title at Hell in a Cell, if that's what you're aiming for. Because it seems like that's kind of the direction that they're going based on some of the stuff that I've been reading, some of the stuff that Dave Meltzer is saying, Brian Alvarez are saying. It just looks like it's going that direction. If that's what you're going to do, then at least let Randy Orton get the title dirty, and then Daniel Bryan can overcome the odds again and get a clean win over him. I mean, at least do something like that. But in this, there's just no winners. And in fact, the biggest losers are the fans when you do something like this, because it's the dumbest move that you could possibly do to just kind of poop all over the main event. I'm trying not to swear. I'm trying to keep this a family show. All ages show. One of the other things going on in WWE is the return of John Cena. They announced his return for Hell in a Cell. They're rushing his return. He had surgery on his arm, and he was supposed to be out for, oh man, a long time. He was supposed to be out until like December or January. I don't remember exactly, but a long time out. And instead, they've announced he's coming back at Hell in a Cell. And there are a couple things that you can take from this. One, Either they could have lied about how bad his injury was in the first place. That happens all the time in professional wrestling. It's not that big of a deal. In fact, you know, back in the day, back before it was common knowledge that wrestling was fake, whatever, a lot of times they would fake an injury and say that the guy's, you know, he's too hurt to come back and he's going to be out 6 months, but he comes back in 3 months instead of six, and it's like a surprise return, you know? So they could have done something like that with John Cena. The problem is, John Cena's only been gone for, what, 6 weeks? Something like that. He hasn't been gone that long. So you're going to take a guy who hasn't been gone all of that long, and you're going to, you know, suddenly bring him back from this injury angle. Not enough time has passed for people to really care that he's returning yet. They're not longing for his return. No one's like, oh my gosh, this show would have been better if John Cena was here, but we know he's been injured. He's been out for a long time. You know, it helps when a guy is gone for a long time because then you kind of forget some of the mistakes he made, some of the dumb things he did. You forget about how repetitive he tends to be in a lot of his matches. And that's the type of thing that John Cena needs right now in order to kind of revitalize his character, maybe even repackage him a little bit. And instead, they're just rushing him back to the show. Now, the other thing is, he very well could have been injured as horribly as he was. His arm could not be fully healed, and they could still be bringing him back anyway. He may be agreeing to come back and wrestle, and it may be just one of those things where, you know, he's John Cena, he doesn't want to stop wrestling. He really does love it. As limited as his moveset is, as much as people pick on him for his, you know, inability to innovate, he really loves wrestling. He lives and breathes and dies for it. So he may have just said, I'm not sitting at home. I'm not spending all this time sitting on my butt. I want to come out and I want to do this. So that's something else going on in WWE right now. So between the rush return of John Cena and this terrible, terrible pay-per-view at Battleground, WWE is suddenly facing this very stiff problem of brand recognition right now. They are stagnating. Raw's 3 hours is not really helping the brand awareness. The only reason why they have 3 hours is because it works good for USA Network. Third hour of Raw does better than the CSI reruns or NCIS reruns, whatever they were doing in that time slot. So, I mean, it's a step in the right direction as far as the network is concerned, but for WWE themselves, it's not the greatest thing that they could be doing right now. Now, as far as TNA is concerned, is Hulk Hogan really gone? Is he still part of the company? There are rumors swirling back and forth whether or not it's all a big swerve or if he's really gone. The big thing that people seem to point at is the fact that Eric Bischoff is, of course, still involved with the company. Anytime you have Bischoff still involved with the company, you're going to have Hulk Hogan not far behind. I think, realistically, when you look at it, TNA is facing a crisis right now financially. Going on the road has cost them a lot more money. They haven't recouped it. Nothing that they do really seems to expand the viewer base. Part of the problem is because they're on Spike TV. It's a highly rated show for Spike TV, just like with the third hour of Raw on USA. TNA Impact on Spike TV blows the network average out of the water. One of the highest rated shows on the network. So they love it as far as the show is concerned. It is costing them a lot of money to go on the road. And the whole thing has been this tax write-off for Panda Energy. Panda Energy is this giant, you know, multi-billion dollar conglomerate, oil, natural gas, coal, whatever. And so they've been using TNA really as a tax write-off. I don't know why my voice just cracked there, but really as a tax write-off and using the losses from TNA to kind of offset some other things happening. Well, ever since the financial slump in 2008, they've been a little more weary, but they've been kind of, you know, going steady with the course. They've been willing to experiment. They brought in Hogan. They went live on Mondays. They moved it forward an hour. They moved it back an hour. Anything they could do to kind of play with it and experiment. But now it's just gotten to the point where they realize that nothing's ever going to change. You know, if they change the time slot, it's the same rating. If they change it to Monday and it's live, it's the same rating. If they bring in Hulk Hogan, it's the same rating. If they cut their pay-per-views, it's the same rating. You know, nothing really seems to change that rating. And Dixie Carter, who's head of TNA, is married to Bob Carter. Bob Carter sits on the board of Panda Energy. Bob Carter's mom, June Carter, I think, is the, I guess, the chairman of the board of Panda Energy. Bob Carter's name is no longer listed on the board of Panda Energy. If that means something, you know, I don't know. That could be an oversight. It could be he's doing something else within the company. You know, there's no answers right now. This is all, you know, somebody noticed it, but there hasn't been any public statement. We're not really sure what's happening or why. But his name is no longer listed on the board. And June Carter is really the one who's making the decisions on what gets money and what doesn't get money, how much money they get, you know, because of the corporate tie-in, whatever. And TNA has found itself where it's in this financial situation where it never gets any worse, but it never gets any better. So what they really have started to do is cut some of the guys who had these big paychecks, and they're trying to find younger talent, newer talent, guys who can do good matches but aren't going to make a whole lot of money. They aren't going to cost a whole lot because, you know, you lose a guy like Ken Anderson, nobody really notices. You lose a guy like Mike Knox, and, you know, it's not that big of a deal. But if you bring in a new young guy who people haven't seen, but he's dynamic and he's flashy and he's having good matches, then, you know, people stick around to see what this guy's capable of. They like to see the energy. They like to see the spirit. They don't lose anybody. They don't gain anybody, but they save a whole lot of money on the bottom line. And that's kind of what's happening with the Hogan situation. He's no longer employed by the company. He doesn't have a contract. He's no longer getting a paycheck, so he's not draining from the company. But because Eric Bischoff is there, if Panda Energy decides it wants to sell off the company to, let's say that Universal wants to buy it, or Spike TV wants to buy it, or, you know, some network wants to buy TNA in order to make it a network show, kind of like WCW was with, you know, Turner, TBS and TNT, that kind of thing, then they could bring Hogan back in. Hogan being gone is not a forever deal. It's not that he's never coming back. WWE, probably not going to make a play for him. You know, they know what's up. It's not like there's anything happening there to bring him in necessarily. It's just one of those things where he's not there with the company, so they can say he's not involved, but then as soon as they can find money again, they probably will hire him and bring him back. The other thing is, I mentioned that Wes Briscoe was dropped from Aces and Eights, but as far as I could tell, he was not actually released by the company. He tweeted a couple cryptic things this week telling people to stay tuned to Impact. There's still something going on there. So, you know, he didn't really say anything specific, and I don't have any specific details. But like I said, I couldn't find any mention that he's actually released from the company, and it looks like that is the case, that he's still employed and he will be coming back at some point, probably to do the whole, you know, fall of Bully Ray angle as far as that goes within TNA. Now, the show this week, I can tell you that Impact this week was actually a very good show. I'm not the only one who thought this, amazingly. I've seen a lot of things coming through from that, especially on the Observer site, F4WOnline.com. A lot of people are just said the show came off really well. Of course, there were some problems along the way, as you can expect, but they're getting their Bound for Glory card finalized, so they can kind of push for that. Kurt Angle is returning. He's going to be taking on Bobby Roode at Bound for Glory. So that's actually looking to be a pretty good match there as far as that goes. Sting and Magnus, Magnus has basically been feeling down. He's had a lot of losses. Sting says that he'll give him his match at Bound for Glory that'll put him on the map. And it was just going to be one of these things where it's like the older veteran taking the young guy under his wing. He's going to give him his money match at the pay-per-view so that they could, have this glorious moment, whatever. But now they're teasing this split in the main event mafia. Magnus is having a lot of problems with Sting in their match this week. They weren't communicating, botched a spot on there. They got mad at each other. Sting tagged himself in to get the Stinger Splash and get the pin, and Magnus was upset about that, and the two of them are having this falling out. So it looks like Magnus may be turning heel, turn on Sting, probably will beat Sting. I would assume the two of them are going to have a great match at Bound for Glory, but then I would assume that Magnus will do something dirty, underhanded, steal the win from Sting, and push him to a upper-level heel. So you'll have Bully Ray as one heel. You'll have Magnus as another big heel. And then you'll have, your Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe, Sting, those guys will be the other faces opposite of them on the other side. Because they need... they got to push some new people. They got to push somebody to be the top. It looks like Magnus, this whole main event mafia storyline thing. And main event mafia can fall apart. I mean, that's not that big of a deal, because the whole point of main event mafia was to have a team going up against aces and eights. And with the implosion of aces and eights, and with them, basically dropping everybody, you don't need someone to foil a heel team, a heel stable that's falling apart. The show this week, we had Austin Aries and Jeff Hardy in a match. Went about 15 minutes, and it was excellent. This is a four-star match, maybe a little less, maybe 3.5, whatever. But, I mean, good. This is a really good match. For a TV match, this was fantastic. If this had been a pay-per-view match, it would have been very good. Samoa Joe comes out at the end and inserts himself into the Ultimate X match at Bound for Glory. So that looks pretty cool out there as far as that goes. ODB had a match with one of the bromance guys, Jesse. It was, a joke match. It was fun. It was no big deal. But then Lady Tapa came out, who's the Samoan big monster. Fine, whatever. I mean, when they do these intergender matches with ODB, it's a joke to begin with, so not that big of a deal. But to kind of push Lady Tapa as this big monster coming in, I mean, it's the type of thing that you need to do. They had a Hall of Fame ceremony with, Ego. Daniels and Kazarian were going to induct Bobby Roode into their own Hall of Fame. They had this, time-wasting segment for this Hall of Fame thing, but it was fine, for what it was in professional wrestling. It was okay. But then it brought out Kurt Angle, who's actually being inducted into the TNA Hall of Fame. They had a big, face-off. Roode made a run for it, and that's when Angle called him out for a match. You had Brooke versus Velvet Sky. This was terrible. This was... not a good match. Part of it, though, was Velvet Sky was teasing that she was still injured from last week fighting when Lady Tapa attacked her. So that's part of the reason why it didn't have as much to it. But still, it wasn't all that great. Sting and Magnus versus Bad Influence. This was okay. It was fine. It was nothing special, nothing horrible. But this was teasing the fight between Magnus and Sting. And one of the things that happened in the match was Magnus clearly had a win available. He did a top rope elbow and could have gone for the pin right there, but instead decided he was going to go for a submission. And Sting was kind of chiding him that he should have just gone for the pin right there. What are you doing? Turn around. Just pin the guy. Do it. Get it over with. Magnus wanted to show off. do his submission, and of course he gets attacked from behind by, I think it was Christopher Daniels, which sets up the whole ending with Sting doing the blind tag to come in. So there you go. They had AJ Styles versus Garrett Bischoff and Nux in a handicap match. It was not great. I mean, it was leading to this thing at the end where AJ Styles is going to get a quick roll-up on Bischoff. Bully Ray was at the ringside doing commentary, and he jumps in the ring and starts attacking with the chain, and he's kind of pissed off at his guys for failing. It was one of those things where, you know, just adds to the heat between AJ and Bully Ray. And as far as the psychology behind doing the match and then doing the beating up segment at the end, everything was fine as far as that goes. There was no problem with the angle itself. But as far as the match being executed, AJ Styles just looked off. And I don't know if it was just like this was not his night or if there's something in his head, because his contract is running out. He has not re-signed. There's talk that he wants to, but there's talk that he kind of wants to try for that WWE run to see if anybody's interested in him, if he could go there, if he could, you know, have a chance to make something of himself there. I don't see WWE being interested in him. He sent out feelers before to WWE, and they just weren't. They don't have interest in him because he's a guy that they didn't market and they didn't build and has a name for himself outside of WWE that they don't really see that they can take over. They can't rename him because he's big enough. You know, that's one of the big things WWE has is they want to own the name so they can do the licensing, the merchandise, all that kind of stuff. And when you own your name, that's the reason why Bryan Danielson is now Daniel Bryan, you know. It just makes it a really tough situation. So I don't see him going to WWE. I don't see anything happening on that front at all. And I'm hoping that this match being bad maybe is more of a sign of young Bischoff. You know, one of the things that I've heard a lot of people say is that if Eric Bischoff was not in charge, then his son would not be wrestling. And that's probably very true. So I don't know. Overall, the show, I think the psychology of the show of Impact was good. And the crowd that they had, they were in, I don't know, I think they were in Georgia somewhere. Fayetteville, Georgia, maybe, somewhere like that. So the crowd they had was super hot. The psychology of the show was great. Everything more or less made sense on this show. The only thing that didn't, they did a backstage segment with AJ and Dixie Carter, and it was just kind of stupid train wreck, Vince Russo type moment. You know, didn't make any sense, and there was really no point to it, but it was what it was. It was no big deal. But other than that, everything else was actually pretty good on this show, except for the wrestling in a couple spots. You know, you had the women's match that was terrible. AJ looked off. But the Austin Aries match with Jeff Hardy was fantastic. It was fabulous. Tag match, Main Event Mafia, was okay. It was fine. It was, you know, nothing terrible. And, you know, everything else was okay. So that's kind of a thumbs up show when you look at TNA, considering the track record that they've had. If they can have a night where the show is pretty good, and then you've got a hot crowd, makes it feel that much better. I think if you were there live in the arena, it probably came across as a fantastic show. On TV, it came across as a pretty good show. And that's good. That's good for TNA. That's the type of thing they need. All right, guys. That's going to do it for me. I'm going to wrap it up. We've been here about an hour, so thanks for listening. This is Pop Culture Network Radio. As always, I'm your host, Dirt. If you want to get a hold of me, you can contact me at dirt@popculturenetwork.com. You can find me on Twitter at @PCN_dirt. You can find me Facebook, facebook.com/VGLosers. You can find me on Google Plus. If you go to Google Plus and just type in Doug Turner, you're going to find me there. You can also find Pop Culture Network on Google+. So yeah, you can also go to the website. If you go to the website, go to our message board at jointheforums.com, the official forums of the Pop Culture Network. You can find me on there. Send me a private message on there if you want to. Any of those ways that you want to get a hold of me, you can also call our 24-hour voicemail line. It's area code 217-953-4025. And since this is an audio show that we're doing here, if you leave a quick message that's, you know, 10, 20 seconds long, you want to ask a question or make a quick comment, if you keep it clean and keep it to the point, we can actually incorporate it into the show. So if you've always wanted to hear your own voice on a Pop Culture Network podcast, again, you can call area code 217-953-4025, our 24-hour voicemail line. You can leave us a message there and keep it short, keep it to the point, keep it clean, and we'll use it here in the show. Anything else you guys want to talk about? Any questions you want to ask? Anything else you want to bring up? Anything else that happens at New York Comic Con this weekend? Anything like that, feel free to leave us a question or comment, and we'll talk about it next week here on the show, guys. Again, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.